Visiting in Des Moines this week was Secretary of Commerce Henry A. Wallace, one of our own Iowa men, whom we're very proud to welcome back to the Hawkeye State whenever he finds it possible to come. He's been here for several days with his family, and we're fortunate this afternoon to have him in our studio. Mr. Wallace, in the minds of a great many of our people, the greatest challenge facing our nation is a question of full employment. Even though we must all recognize the reconversion period from war to peace is bound to cause dislocations, developments the past few weeks have made for additional concern. You, Mr. Secretary, in your interesting book, 60 Million Jobs, have awakened countless Americans to the seriousness of the challenge. We hope in this broadcast you'll feel free to make any comments you wish on the subject of full employment as you apply it to the agricultural Midwest or to the nation as a whole, for it is, of course, a national problem. My own questions will largely deal with items suggested in your 60 million jobs. Perhaps as logical as any way in which to open is to have you restate the goal as you see it.
What we want is continuous full employment within the framework of our democratic capitalistic system designed to ensure the maximum of free enterprise.
Well, Mr. Wallace, how does the goal, approximately 60 million jobs by 1950, compare with the highest level of employment we've known in the past?
Well, last year we had about 64 million employed, counting the boys in the armed services. In peacetime, back in 1940, we had about 46 million employed, but there were 8 million unemployed.
Actually, then, we can say that the goal we have set for 1950 shouldn't be any harder to attain than what we actually did achieve in some years in the past. Is that
right?
Well,
60 million in 1950 would be proportionately no higher than the employment we had in 1929. We must remember that our population has increased considerably.
Right. Now, as to achieving the goal, just how does the challenge fit into the framework of our capitalistic system? Are we to understand by that that you believe we can achieve the end of the rainbow without substantial government assistance?
Well, Herb, I don't think we're ever going to come to the end of the rainbow.
Well, as near to it as we can, then.
But I don't think substantial governmental assistance is the essence of the so-called Murray Full Employment Bill. The essence is to have all the elements in our national economy focused toward the specific end, an end that'll benefit all of us, the end of full employment. That's what we want. We want the President and the Congress to focus that problem for us. We want to get as much of the problem solved by private enterprise as we can. We want the President to suggest methods as to just how the taxation system may be modified. We want the Congress to bring its full investigatory powers to bear on that problem so that the maximum of inducement can be furnished to investment capital to put people to work. Now, if that fails, then, of course, government should step in and will have to step in. Let there be no illusion about that. We know that no matter what administration may be in power, if there's any large amount of unemployment, government will step in. I think there'll be less unemployment if there is a plan of government of public works blueprinted that can be thrown into gear promptly.
And, of course, you also hope that the local governments, such as cities and municipalities, will also devise plans of their own toward the goal we're seeking.
Yes, we don't want any leaf-raking again. We want projects that are really useful to people.
It's very encouraging to hear you say that, Mr. Wallace. Now, another question in that same general theme. Will the plan in any way entail inflation of some form or another?
I don't think we're in any serious danger of inflation, except possibly during the ensuing year. And even during this coming year, I think the situation is a good bit like a cold house with a big fire in the fireplace. Our front may feel a bit inflated, but our rear at the same time may feel in danger of deflation.
Well, that's well put.
I think there's just about as much danger of deflation this year as there is of inflation. Some areas of the economy will say there's inflation. Others will say there's serious deflation. What I'm afraid of is that the farmer may get a touch of deflation.
Well, we're all a little afraid of that, of course, particularly in this area. Does the plan demand any considerable tax revisions?
Well, you mean the Murray bill?
Well, yes, the general plan, the goal we all have now for the larger...
Well, obviously, if we're going to have the amount of investment capital put to work to do the job, it'll be necessary to, as soon as the danger of inflation is passed, to make very radical changes in the excess profits tax legislation and other types of taxation, so as to encourage the businessman to go to work furnishing jobs.
The premise, then, as I see it, is that all who seek work should have a right to work.
Yes, but the premise is not that any particular man can come to government and say, furnish me my job. I didn't get one. But it does mean that the government shall provide such a favorable climate by its overall actions that any worthy man who really wants to work can find a job. In other words, the objective is the creation of opportunity and not an absolute insurance to every individual that he'll get a job even if he's no good.
Well, now, if the achieving of a large percentage of the 60 million jobs depends on business and industry, they, of course, must thrive and prosper, what do you feel is necessary to predicate the ability of those groups to provide the additional jobs we're seeking?
I think business and industry can do a real job. This is indicated by the Committee for Economic Development, which has put on a very extensive survey covering all of the manufacturing industries. That survey indicates that the manufacturing concerns have so much confidence in the future of the United States that... about 55 million workers would find jobs in 1947. This does not include the men in the armed services, so there is not too great a discrepancy between the Committee for Economic Development figures based on businessmen predictions and my figures. Mind you, my figures are based on 1950, and their figures are based on 1947.
Coming to your figures or your estimates, what is the approximate makeup, shall we say, of the 60 million? You speak of the other group thinking in terms of 55 million by 1947. Now, how many of the 60 million you hope for in 1950 are men? How many are women? And have you any estimate on how many would be in agriculture or in business and some of the other walks of life?
Well, roughly, there would be about 37 million that are so-called labor. Of these, about 15 million would be in manufacturing and mining, 3 million or so in transportation and so on. Of the 23 million, there would be roughly 8 million in agriculture and 2 million in housework and... The rest would be in working for themselves in the professions, businessmen or associated with businessmen in top positions.
The agriculture figure actually then isn't so very different from the present figure we have.
About the present figure, and considerably less than before the war.
May I ask if there's any explanation on that, perhaps since that's a very pertinent question in this locality? We'd like to have an observation from you on that. Less in agriculture than before the war.
We don't have quite enough people on farms here in Iowa and the Central Corn Belt at the present time to do a first-class job. But in other parts of the country, there have been altogether too many people on the farms. They can do better for themselves and better for the country if they're someplace else. And it'd be a fine thing if we could find job opportunities for them in town rather than on those little farms, those poor farms, in certain areas.
Yes, we can understand that. Right here, of course, the situation, as you stated it, is a bit on the critical side. Well, coming back to the general picture again, do you propose a sort of a guaranteed annual wage or some minimum return or something like that?
A guaranteed annual wage would be a fine thing in certain industries. Other industries, it's quite an impractical method.
What level do you feel we ought to seek to maintain wages at? A level as compared to the present, or?
It'll be a good thing for the farmer and the businessman if present income of labor can be, that is, the income of labor that was enjoyed prior to VJ Day, can be substantially maintained. Of course, no one expects it can be fully maintained, but if the cutback in hours can be compensated for by some measure of increase in the basic wage rate, it'll be definitely to the benefit of the farmer and of the businessman as well. Certain of the larger corporations appreciate this and have taken measures to increase the basic wage rate at the same time as the number of hours were cut back.
Do you have any thought on what the story will likely be in agriculture? Will wage rates change substantially there, increase or decrease, or be maintained?
Well, the agricultural wage rate is directly hooked up with the wage rate in the cities. If there is substantial unemployment in the cities, undoubtedly the agricultural wage rate will be reduced, and the farmer's income will be reduced at an even more rapid rate in all probability than the agricultural wage rate. So
yes.
The farmer is caught between two fires there.
That recalls the days, let's go back to 1929, when payrolls dropped so substantially from that year on to 1933, and then agricultural income also dropped drastically in that same period.
It was a pretty sad time.
Yes, I should say. Most of us remember that very well. Well, you've already told us some of the benefits that will come to farmers through the maintaining of a high wage scale and full employment. Now, shall we say just a word about the returning war veteran? After all, he is a most important segment of our population, too. How does he stand? What is his stake?
His stake is just exactly the same as everybody, as the stake of all the rest of us. There's really remarkably little difference, and that's the way most of the returning war veterans want to be treated.
In other words, we're all in the same boat.
We're all exactly in the same boat. Of course, there are certain special congressional provisions that have been made for the returning war veteran, but as I've seen them in action, they won't meet his problem unless this big problem is met.
Unless we have full employment.
That's right.
In your book, you speak of human frontiers. I wish you'd elaborate just a little on that. To me, that was very significant.
We've just begun to enable people to be healthy in this country. That's a frontier that's challenging to all of us. We all know what vitamins have done for some people. We all know of recent scientific discoveries in the field of medicine. We know that there lots of doctors that are not to be found, that should be found out in the open country, in absence of hospitals in the open country. During the draft days, we found that there were about 4 million of the 14 million boys that were definitely substandard because they hadn't been had access to proper medical or dental service. Well, those frontiers should be conquered for the sake of giving all of us a fair and an even break. I just know no end of boys that could be full of vigor and energy going ahead that are not, simply because they haven't had their health or their diet properly taken care of.
Well, that's certainly an important point, Mr. Wallace. I see our time is slipping away very fast. There's another question or two I'd like very much to ask you, and one is concerning the matter of soil conservation. That, too, seems most important to a lot of us, and I know is close to your heart.
Well, I don't know exactly what bearing it has on 60 million jobs, but... Let's put it this way. 60 million jobs in and of themselves are not enough. We want to get out of 60 million jobs abundance for all of us. We want all the workers to be producing fruitfully. We want them to be, in their respective fields, to be working hard. Now, if the farmer producing fruitfully and working hard on the land is to furnish food at the most reasonable rates for the rest of us, then he must have the soil fertility maintained. There are literally hundreds of thousands of farmers working on farms so rolling, so eroded, so poor that they're just not doing a first-class job for themselves or for the country. Soil fertility is the very basis of our national life.
Well, Mr. Wallace, I see our time has gone away very, very fast. I wish we might have had time for more questions, but we are most grateful to you for making the points you have, and we certainly appreciate the last point you made, which is so close to the hearts of all of us here in the Middle West, just as is the important job of full employment for the entire nation.